As women, we all wake up one day and realize that youth, marriage, and perfect skin don't come with a refund policy. If that hits home, Party's Over is good for you. It's the show where beauty, heartbreak, and brutal honesty collide. Each week, beauty rebel and author of BS to Botox, Sandralina Silverman, and her guests spill the truth about aging, love, and everything in between. Expect laughter, wisdom, and the occasional Botox confession. Real women, real stories, real talk. Download Party's Over today on the Odyssey app. As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the battery doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly, but you can give us a call right now, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120 with questions about what's going to happen to your plant material with this crazy forecast. Is it really going to happen? Who knows? Or comments or concerns or whatever it happens to be. And Mr. Kelly,
yo,
what are you going to do with your garden?
Well, our outside stuff should be good because it's all perennials and it's there and it's in the ground and it should be good. And then the plants that we have outside now that we're inside all winter, we'll bring in.
Ah.
So we're going to be out of town next week. So we're going to be I think the temperature where we're going to be is like 75.
Oh, really? So you're going to take all your plants with you?
I wish we could. No, we'll just bring them in the house before we head out of town. But kind of unexpected. I read that this morning at 5 o'clock, and I hadn't pre-read the forecast, and I saw that word, and I thought,
wait
a second. It's April. What? You know, yeah, so.
Right.
Hopefully it won't amount to much, but it's going to be cold enough for that, so that's a concern.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So you're going to tell us what we should do?
Yeah, run.
bundle up your plants.
Exactly.
So, yes. All right.
All right.
Have fun.
It is Saturday morning, and we get together and we have a discussion about what's impacting your backyard. Oh, that extension on that downspout on your gutters. Oh, my goodness gracious. It's really making a flooded area. Or the side or the front landscapes, especially garden space. I want to do a raised bed. How do I do a raised bed? What should I put there? And the taste of the tropics, those houseplants, like Brian was saying, they're going to bring theirs back in. I've got some of mine outside. I think I'm going to leave them out and just see what happens because I got, several or a couple of the same varieties. Some of them are protected just still, and other ones are out. So I'm going to see if it gets really that cold, what's going to happen. Anyway, should you be pruning? Should you be shearing? Should you be watching for bugs? Yes. Pine sawflies. On my Mugo pine, they really, did some devastation. But the interesting thing is, guess what? Sparrows are going into this Mugo pine. Mine's about 7 feet high, maybe 8 feet high, and about 12 or 14 feet wide. And they are actually going after these pine sawflies. So they're little worms. What they do is eat the needles off the pine trees right below the candles, right below the new growth. So it's really kind of a wild, crazy circumstance. And, I'm going to give you some ideas that I've sort of orchestrated over the years. And this final judgment is going to be on yours, shoulders. But maybe I can help a little bit. Anyway, this is your show, and I appreciate you inviting me into your home or wherever you happen to be listening. Another important player is Alex. He's producing. He answers the phone, pushes all the buttons and everything else. So when you call, he just needs your first name and where you're calling from. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. I can come to your home and do landscape consultations if you like for me to do that. It's called a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage has an email address and phone number where I can be reached. Well, let's get moving. Today's stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Finally, the sky was starting to lighten up slightly. And historic style street lights were really making the area bright. Birds were singing out, welcoming the morning. Miniature geodesic dome floats in the lawn area. And also with this, there's a solar panel and a wind turbine. So I'm not exactly sure what those were for. Well, I do know, but I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to go find out yourself. The street trees were really leafed out. There's three island plantings with a single fruit tree in each one. The sounds of cars flying by. Where am I? Well, I'm at the corner of Manchester Road and Kings Highway. There are four raised beds. The majority of the plant material seems to be raspberry canes. Picnic table there offers respite, and that's sitting nearby, so you can just kind of go and relax. The signage actually names what this space is. It's Youth Exploring Science. It's a youth garden, St. Louis Science Center, and it's sponsored by Gateway Greening. So it's a really great place. It's kind of an unusual location, but so many people drive by on the way to the West End, on the way to the hospitals, BJC, and that whole complex and everything else. It's really amazing. Other plantings include daffodils, which have finished, ornamental grasses, which are still, they need to be cut, but not a whole lot of new growth coming on those. There's curly dock there. There's dandelions, which is really spicing up the neatly mowed lawn areas. Flowering shrubs were well budded and ready to explode in white flowers. The street trees along Manchester Road were locust trees. So this is kind of a unique circumstance, unique setting. So I've haven't been there to take my stroll for a little while, but again, it is done through the Science Center, St. Louis Science Center. It's Youth Exploring Science, Youth Garden. So great place, great location. So if you have any questions or concerns, 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, the first phone call of the day is Nadesh from Overland. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fine. I have two questions. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I grew up in France by Switzerland, and my grandfather, who was a gardener, had ordered from a catalog a plant called Mahonia. And he grew it, not as a bush, but it grew into the fence. And it's all along the fence, and it has fragrant yellow flowers and yellow grapes. And to this day, my brother still said, still there, and that was 1953. I was wondering, where can I get it, and would it survive St. Louis weather, and can I grow it as a bush like holly?
Basically not. It won't survive here. So Mahonia, okay. I mean, you can see it sometimes for sale, but it's really the nurseries that have it for sale, they should put a, let's say, an asterisk on it saying this is not really going to be a plant that's going to be able to survive our screwy weather. Just, I mean, you heard the weather. This Tuesday, we could get down into the 30s with snow. At this late in the season, I mean, no. So don't, you know.
No.
I mean, the memories are great, but don't try to grow it.
Okay. And the second one, I used to walk with my grandmother. That was in the 50s over there, too. And she used to pick along the road a plant called saponaria, and she would use it for her laundry. It makes soap. And I was wondering, can I get it and just grow it in a pot, or does it grow along the road here in Missouri?
To be honest with you, I don't recognize that name of that particular plant, so I would say go try the Missouri Botanical Garden website and put it in there and see if they can give you a help.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Yep.
Yes.
Bye.
So just go to mobot.org and put the plant name in there. So anyway, now let's head out to Lake St. Louis and go into Jane's yard. Hi, Jane.
Good morning. Next spring, I would like to have large pots of hyacinths and jonquils in front of my house. And other than buying the bulbs this fall, I have no idea what to do.
Well, if you have the pots, you got to get those, of course.
I have the pots.
Okay.
Yes.
And basically what you need to do is, I've got large pots. I do the same thing every year. And my pots, I have about, depending upon the size, about the bottom 25 to 30% is, let's say, rock or gravel or whatever. Then the rest of it's filled up with just potting mix.
Uh-huh.
And I just, I plant them. Depending upon the type of bulb, the depth-wise, I make sure that none of them, as I'm planting them, are actually touching the side of the pot, so there's a little bit of an insulation with the potting mix around it.
Oh, okay.
And that's pretty much it. I mix them up. I put, some of them, they're going to go deeper, like the jonquils or the daffodils or whatever, and then I put, crocus on top of, on top of those, but I have a layer of the potting mix in between, so that way I get two different, sort of sequences of blooms.
Okay, but do I put the bulbs in the fridge and plant them in February? Do I plant them in the fall?
No, you plant them in the fall like you normally would.
And put them in the garage for the winter?
No. Just leave the pots outside. My pots sit out all winter long. There has been certain circumstances where the winter has been severe and, some of the bulbs have not really been able to survive. When I go back into the pot, and dig them up and look at them, they look fine. It's just that something, they feel a little bit soft, so they got frozen. So,
squishy.
But that's just a chance I take. So percentage-wise, that's a small percentage, and it's well worth it because I like them in pots.
Okay, and then I'm assuming that this is only a one-year deal, that these will not survive to bloom a second year.
Basically, they don't. I mean, I've tried it, and some of them will come back. But for the most part, I just kind of pull those out of the pots And then actually what I do is there's a park right across the street from us. I sneak over in the park sometimes. I plant some of them in there. I plant some in our yard, you know, and it's surprising. I just kind of dig a hole and dump them into it. And
do they rebloom?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it completely, you know, catches me by surprise. I'm not saying all of them do, but percentage-wise, it's well worth my effort.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, super. Now I know what to do. I thank you so much.
Certainly, my pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
And from Lake St. Louis, let's head into South St. Louis and go into Jane's yard. Hi, Jane.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mike, I have a question that the other Jane sort of answered for me, but... Or you had answered her. I planted about 5 or 6 tulip bulbs in a pot last fall, and they got nipped, I guess, the last cold spell that we had. They were coming up fine, and they just, you know, after that cold spell, they were white and dead-looking.
Ooh.
So my question is, can I save them for next year, or should I just pitch them?
I'd probably just pitch them, especially because the tulips even in the ground are not reliable, you know, for giving you more than 1 year of show. Sometimes they will, but for the most part, they're not going to give you another, let's say, a showing of blooms. So I would say start
great.
All over again. And maybe, I don't know how large the pot you're using, but it should be at least 14 to 16 inches in diameter.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks, Mike, so much for your answer. I appreciate that.
Sure, my pleasure. Because if you use smaller pots, then the chances of them, you know, getting nipped by the cold is just going to be enhanced by that. So the larger pots just have more insulation.
I think the pot that I have them in is about 12 inches at the top, so I need to go a little bit bigger.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yes, my pleasure. And now let's go stay in South St. Louis and go to Barbara's yard. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. We planted a wildflower garden about 10 years ago, and it turned out to be beautiful. Now the goldenrod has taken over, so last October we dug up the goldenrod. Then we put down plastic, covered it with mulch. So yesterday we started taking off the mulch, and I was so surprised there are all these green plants peeking up. That is goldenrod?
Probably is.
Does it go on forever?
Yes, it'll haunt you for the rest of your life.
Oh, no,
basically, when you dig it up, if you leave just a small percentage or a small piece of the root system, then, you know, that stuff is tough and durable. It is a wildflower. That's why they call it wildflowers. It's native. It's natural. And it's going to come back and, you know, for a long time, to be honest.
Okay, so, and we've already purchased, you know, we've worked through the Missouri Wildflower Nursery, so
mm-hmm.
I've already purchased squawweed and senecio to put in there. I want to get rid of the goldenrod. Well, I don't know if that's possible anymore, so can we do anything else this year besides dig that up? Can we leave the plastic and mulch on some of it? Or?
Yeah, to be honest with you, the plastic and mulch is not going to do it's not going to help.
Do we need something like Roundup?
Or yeah, you need to go after it with, you know, an herbicide.
Uh-huh.
So that's going to be your best. Many people don't like to use the herbicides, I understand, but that's going to be the most effective approach. And so get that. I mean, you don't want to necessarily do it when it's raining or cloudy or cold or whatever, because you want the plants to kind of actively absorb it. But what I would do is, you know, where you see the goldenrod, walk on it to kind of cause some damage to, you know, the growth that you're seeing, and then put the Roundup on it right after that.
And this time of year we could do that?
Yes. Not while it's this quite this cool, but as soon as the sun starts coming out and, you know, gets a little bit warmer. But yeah, I've already used, you know, Roundup in a couple spots just to kind of see if it's going to be effective, and it has been effective.
And so how long a wait until we do plant in that area then after using Roundup?
Basically, it deactivates when it hits the soil, so it doesn't have any kind of contamination to the soil per se, but you want to make sure that it stays probably at least 10, if not 14 days on the goldenrod, which you're trying to kill off, before you start fooling around with that.
Okay.
So that's where your problem's going to be.
Okay. Well, goldenrod's wonderful when you're out in the prairie, but not in the wildflowers.
Yeah, some of the wildflowers are that way for sure. There's no getting around it. But I use Roundup just like for in the cracks in the concrete, you know, the sidewalks and stuff like that, or the expansion joints. That's where I use it. So I don't use it too much in the yard, but I am using it on one bed space. It's in between the sidewalk and street because I'm converting it from lawn into where I'm going to put ground covers and things like that.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for your help. We always listen, and I thought this is a problem to talk to Mike about. Okay,
yeah, because if you continue to try to just dig it up and get rid of it that way, it's probably going to take you a couple of years.
Okay. Yeah, well, we did some a few years ago, and that was just a little patch. I guess we should have learned then.
You never know.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure. Now let's head out to Wildwood and go into Deb's yard. Hi, Deb.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
Very good.
Great. I got a question for you. A couple of years ago in our front box, we had some, I think it was arborvitaes that were pulled out and put a Japanese maple in there. And I have had the worst time with, I think they're called volunteer sprouts that come out from the base of the tree. I guess they're left over from the roots of the arborvitae. And I can't get rid of them. Do you have any suggestion?
Well, the arborvitae, if you pulled it out and got rid of the root system, there shouldn't be any kind of sucker growth coming up. You're saying there's some evergreens there?
Well, no, it's not actually. See, that's what I'm saying. I don't even remember if it was an arborvitae that was there. But we had a tree cut down, and yes, those sucker roots are coming up. Maybe it was not an arborvitae, but they look like small trees.
Right.
And they're just, I mean, and this year there's even more of them than there was last year. And other than cutting them down at the root or at the base of the ground,
right,
I don't know how to get rid of them.
If you don't want to use herbicides, I mean, you're kind of stuck. But also, what depending upon what type of Japanese maple you have, this may be sucker growth off the root system of your Japanese maple. So in other words, the Japanese maple, certain varieties are like three different trees glued together. The root system, then the trunk, and then the top. So and top meaning where the leaves are as opposed to the trunk. So they could be coming off the root system of the Japanese maple. So do they leaf out and look like, you know, what kind of leaves do they look like?
You know what? I don't let them get that long, but they're very green when they first come up.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because, I mean, it could be, you know, again, I would say just wait and until they fully leaf, you know, until you can see a full leaf. And then take it to your favorite garden center and have them ID it and find out if it's sucker growth coming off your Japanese maple or if it's coming off the roots of a tree that was there before. Because unless you planted right on top of the existing tree, they shouldn't be coming up that close, you know, to your Japanese maple.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess if they are the sucker roots or whatever you want to call them coming up from the Japanese maple, other than just keep cutting them down,
there's not too much
else I can do.
Right, because if you start using a systemic type herbicide, so in other words, a woody plant killer, then it's going to cause an impact on the root system and cause an impact ultimately on your Japanese maple.
Okay. Well, let's just say they aren't from the Japanese maple. Then is there some way of getting rid of them other than the herbicide, or is that what you just suggested?
Basically, I mean, there's other than continuing to do what you're doing, there's nothing else unless you want to start digging down into it, into the ground, and see if they're coming off an existing root system. Because ultimately what's going to happen is that the root system of a tree that has been removed each year is going to decline and decline and decline. So depending upon the tree, the health of the tree and everything else, it could probably last any place between 3 to 5 years after that.
Okay.
And continue to put out growth because it's desperate.
Well, I got to tell you, the spring, it looks like it's extremely desperate because I cannot believe how many of those I've got coming up. And like I said, in years past, I've just gone out there and cut them down or, at the ground level. But this year, there's a lot. So, I'll go ahead and cut it off, take it to a plant center, see what they say, and then I'll go from there.
Right.
So, thank you.
Certainly. My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Uh-huh. You too.
And thank you.
Jim, we'll be talking to you after the break. So 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, as much as I like warm weather, and I am solar powered, so when the sun is not out, it's my power's going down. But anyway, this cooler weather has, again, extended the spring and made it even more fantastic. The dogwoods are nothing but striking. I mean, Tracy and I went out to St. Charles the other day, and on the way out there, just along the highways and other places to see the dogwoods, it's, I mean, unbelievable. And then you see them in people's yards, you know, whether the whites, that's the native one, the other hybrids, the pinks and everything else. So we've already had the magnolia time. Now we're having the dogwood time. It is just, I mean, and then the bulbs, you know, the spring bulbs. Tulips are still in bloom. Not all the places. Most of mine have already started to drop their petals. But there are certain locations where they haven't even started to drop petals at all yet. So it's just kind of incredible. With this cool weather, it does make it so I want the heat. But anyway, it makes it aesthetically a really nice time of year. So let's head out to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good. Hey, Mike. The last few years, I've noticed that I'm getting some poana in my grass, in the lawn. And I use Barricade every spring for crabgrass, but I was told to start using the Barricade fertilizer in the fall to try to control the poana. Is that correct?
Why would you use it in a fertilizer in the fall? You mean the herbicide?
Well, it's the Barricade is, you know, I mean, I guess that's the way it comes. It's a crabgrass preventer, but it's got some fertilizer
okay.
in with it.
Right.
Do they make it without the fertilizer?
I think they do, and if not, probably I would just go with, you know, what kind of lawn do you have?
It's just a mixture of fescue.
Okay, so it is you. That's a time of year when you do want to do the fertilizing. So, but yeah, basically what you need to do mid to late August is when you put down the, you know, the pre-emergent. So that's when it's, you know, the annual bluegrass, the chickweed, the henbit, all that other stuff. That's when that's germinating. That's when you want to kill it off at the point of germination. So the herbicide, depending upon what type you want to use, if you haven't had good luck with the one you've been using, I'd try something else.
Okay, and you said like mid-August is the time to do that?
Yeah, mid to late August.
Okay, all right, well, that's all I needed. I appreciate the info.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah, I mean, those annual cool season weeds, you know, I mean, whether it's like the annual bluegrass that you're talking about, speedwell, chickweed, henbit, all that stuff, that's when it's germinating. It's in full flower right now. It's just totally outrageously crazy. And the cool weather's extending the time. So even to get it under control, you know, if with you, you've got an individual, there's small individual clumps, so it's a little bit harder to do. But some of these people, I mean, their yards are just nothing but henbit or chickweed or whatever it happens to be. So good luck with that. But yeah, August, you know, mid to late August. And like I said, if you had used something for a couple years and you're not happy with the results, switch products. There's nothing wrong with that. Let's head over to Donna's yard now. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How are you today?
Very good.
I have a question. Last year in the fall, about October, I had some landscape work done, and they planted a holly, which is about 6 foot tall. Well, this spring, it looks like the backside of the holly, the part that probably gets the least amount of sun, has just died off. I don't know if I'm guessing probably frost, but I don't know that for sure. And I'm wondering, do I cut off the parts that look like they've been frostbit and go from there? Do I contact the place that I bought it from and say, hey, there's a problem? I'm not really sure. This is the first time I've had a holly, and it was absolutely beautiful when they planted it. I'm so disappointed.
Well, let me put it this way. If it's on the backside, so it's backing up to your house?
Correct.
Okay. Then that should not be the side that would be frost damaged. I mean, that's a side that's more protected. It would be the front where, you know, the cold damage would occur. So to me, and I'm surprised that quickly for to drop a lot of foliage. Usually it's going to happen over a period of time, but not within the first few months. So maybe, you know, I would call whoever did the insulation for you and have them come out and take a look at it, because it sounds like it's, you know, location-wise and lots of different factors. Personally, I don't like hollies close to houses because of the foundation. The concrete is alkaline, and the hollies really like an acidic soil. But any of those, you know, other factors really don't play a role in something that's been in the ground less than a year.
And I'm wondering, too, they put some rock on top of the landscaping. Could that have added to it?
Not that quickly. I mean,
okay.
So to, you know, and for it just to be on one side, to me that says, you know, I'm not saying it was damaged or anything else, but to have it, you know, happen this quick, that's just kind of a real unusual circumstance. Unless it is really, really close to the house and you don't have any kind of, you know, vents coming out from your furnace or any of that other kind of stuff close by, do you?
No, I don't. And there should be enough air circulating around it. It's just kind of there by itself. Air should be able to get around it with no problem.
Yeah, I would say the thing wasn't in really good shape, you know, when they put it in. Even though it looked great, there was maybe some that particular side when they brought it out, you know, when they brought it to your home, maybe it was laying on that side. And something wasn't really obvious, but there were some small cracks in the branches. But, I mean, for that to defoliate within a few months doesn't make sense at all.
Okay. I'll get in touch with them and see if I can't get some help there.
Right.
Thank you so much for your help.
Yeah, it has to be a physical damage type thing. It can't be anything related to anything else.
That makes sense. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. Let's go from Donna over to Rick's yard. Rick, how are you today? Hello, Rick.
Just fine. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Hey, I'm getting a little tired of the weeds in my garden all the time. I've got some straw here. Would I hurt anything with the aeration or a fungus? I'd like to put it in for protection. The
straw is not really going to help with the weed control. So, I mean, you can put it down, but it's not really going to do all that much for you.
I thought it was because it wouldn't be any sunlight it would help.
Weeds are really tough. And, I mean, they can push through a lot of different kinds of circumstances. And if you put it so thick and deep, then it's going to impact any other kind of plant material. So straw is not going to, you're going to have to, you know, really consider either having somebody come out to physically remove the weeds, or you're going to have to physically remove them or use an herbicide. There's nothing else that's really good. I mean, you pile stuff up, people will try to pile mulch up and other things, or they'll put landscape fabric down and put mulch on top of that. Well, that's fine. That can, you know, controls the stuff that's underneath the landscape fabric, but new weed seeds can blow in and germinate going down in through the mulch. So you've got a real difficult circumstance.
Well, weeds are weeds, so thanks, Mike.
Right. Yeah, just look at those weeds like wildflowers. But anyway, thanks, Rick.
Bye-bye.
Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, we're headed back to the phones, and we're headed over to Bob's yard. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good morning. Last summer, I had a mature pin oak thinned out, mostly dead limbs. The question is, should I fertilize it this year, and if so, with what?
Basically, you know, I wouldn't fertilize it necessarily. Fertilizing, I like to feed the soil with, you know, earth augering and backfilling with compost as opposed to putting tree spikes out. I just, you know, that to me just is not the best way for trees overall, or native type trees like what you're talking about. So during the wintertime, that would be halfway out from the trunk to the drip line. You know, start augering holes 6 inches deep. Do a concentric circle, go out 2 feet all the way around, and just backfill that with compost and do that for a couple, you know, every few years. That's the best thing you can do. Healthy soil is the best thing for a healthy tree.
Awesome. That's exactly what I needed. I appreciate your help and love your show.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me on your show. I greatly appreciate it. Let's head now to Margie's. Hi, Margie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I have a problem with an apricot tree I planted about 3-4 years ago, and this year it really was loaded with flowers, and the leaves started pushing out, and then like half the tree looks good, and the other branch that's coming out on the other side, all the leaves on there kind of look wilted. I have no idea what's wrong with it. I don't notice any bug holes. Do you have any ideas for me?
To me, it sounds like some physical damage. So if a branch is, you know, and the whole branch is doing the same thing, that just sounds like some way either wind or something caused, you know, a crack or something in it, and that's where the damage is. I don't think it's related to any kind of disease, insects, or anything else, you know, because it showed up, you know, the way that you just explained. So I would say just kind of leave everything alone and just kind of watch it and monitor it. And if the wilting just continues to the point where the leaves drop off, then consider just taking that branch off entirely.
Okay. It seems like that one, like it has two main branches because I pruned it into a smaller shape.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like one of the main branches. It's not really a branch even. It's like, because the whole thing's only about 4 feet tall.
Right. So it's probably like kind of a trunkish type thing, a split trunk. And so to me, it's still, you know, it sounds like, you know, there's been some kind of physical damage that's happened to it as opposed to anything else.
But just leave it and don't do anything else.
Right.
To it.
Is it an area where mowing's being done or anything like that?
No, it's in a flower bed.
Okay. So, you know, I don't know, you know, what it was, wind damage or whatever it happened to be, or, you know, who knows, but there's really nothing you can do that's going to make any difference.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. And now, Linda, could you do it kind of quick?
Yeah, hi. We just moved here. We've got a big tree. It's as tall as a telephone pole. We were told it's a magnolia. It has big leathery leaves, probably 8 inches long, and like little pod things that look like pine cones. It's the pods are falling off. They're black, and the tree is not looking too hot. And I was just wondering what kind you thought it was and if it's dead or if this is just how they are.
That's how it is. That's a southern magnolia. What you're seeing is those things, that's where the flowers were earlier, you know, that's historic flowers. So I'm assuming these leaves are like dark green, almost like plastic.
Uh-huh.
Right. So it's a southern magnolia. So this is kind of what you can experience.
So and when do they get pretty?
Well, what you're seeing is what you're going to get.
There's no flowers?
Well, you're going to get some flowers. It's going to be when the weather warms up a little bit more. They bloom a little bit later. The saucer and you know, the other magnolias, star magnolias, they bloom in the spring. This particular one blooms in the, you know, in the summer. So what you're seeing is just the pods that were left over from last year's flowering. So the new flowers haven't come this year yet.
Okay, so it'll be in the summer.
Right, exactly.
Okay. All right, thanks, Mike.
Sure. Yeah, it's, you know, those magnolias, and if it's as big as what you're saying, like as high as a telephone pole, that thing is huge. And then the nice thing about them is the way they look and everything else being a broadleaf evergreen. But also, I mean, they are just massive when they, but luckily they don't drop all the leaves at once. But when the leaves are, you know, they drop, you're going to have to clean them up, and you're going to have to clean up those, let's say, spent flowers. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun to have that tree in your yard. But personally, I wouldn't want one myself, but I like it. You know, I certainly like to enjoy seeing them in somebody else's yard because I know there are a lot of work. So anyway, if anybody has questions, we've got lines open after the news, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And Kent, we'll be talking to you right after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the Garden Hotline Tip of the Trowel Hour, and I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can give us a call, or not us, give Alex a call. He just needs your first name, not your question or anything else, and where you're calling from. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Ideas, questions, comments, or concerns. And Mr. Kelly, I know you're the bird guy. I don't know if you heard my circumstance related to the sparrows.
No.
That are plucking pine sawflies off my Mugo pine. At first, I couldn't tell what they were doing. But there's small worms. The sparrows are flying into the Mugo pine. They're bouncing all over the place. And then they can tell where they can see the worms.
Really?
And actually, they're pulling them out and eating them. So, I mean, that's one of the real advantages of feeding birds is you invite them in and they help with some of the insect control.
That's interesting. I didn't hear that. Yeah, because they love the bugs.
Right.
High protein for them, man. They eat that stuff up.
Right.
Well,
so
good.
It makes it so I don't have to squash them because usually I get in there and just squish them with my fingers.
Ew.
But now the sparrows are taking care of it.
Well, now you're gonna feed the sparrows and thank them for that, right?
Absolutely. Well, they're only around because I had been feeding.
Right.
I have stopped feeding because there's some of the local cats are hanging out. And one of them got one of the doves. So I thought, I'm going to stop feeding for a little while. So not quite so many birds. Then the cats will stop coming.
We've got to keep an eye on the cats at our place too. they kind of walk across the field behind the house, our back pasture.
Right.
And they look over at the birds like, but they know I'm waiting for them. I had to chase one away the other day. So every now and then they forget and go for it. And you got to be there ready.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So. Well, that's neat.
Yeah. Great. Well, good to see you, and I'm glad your cold is over. So, anyway, by the way, folks, thanks for having me on your show. We can discuss plant selection, cares for, ups and downs, and all arounds. To your annuals, should you get annuals when it's going to get so cold? Maybe. You'll have to decide. Bulbs, what should you do with your daffodils and tulips? And should you be planting your elephant ears, caladiums, and summer bulbs? Edibles, your ground covers, your house plants, your lawn, your perennials, roses, trees, shrubs, vines, or water gardens. I'll share my thoughts, but please remember, my answers, comments, and opinions is not the only garden path to take, but strictly offered for you to consider. Alex is producing, so he answers the phone. Just your first name and where you're calling from, not the question that you're calling to speak with me about. During the week, I do landscape consulting, which I call a walk and talk. I do them on the weekends, too. Today, after this show, I'm headed out to Ofala, Missouri. So you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, the homepage. That's where my phone number and email address is, and you can contact me, and we'll schedule a walk and talk at your home, where I'll come over and share 40 years of experience. Oh, my gosh, I'm getting so old with all kinds of different scenarios. Tip of the trowel is a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Tip of the trowel goes out to the Green Center. Now, this is a really unique, not-for-profit organization. Their greenhouse is busting with plant material, and they're going to be soon really ready for you to take them and put them in your garden. You can shop online at their plant sales store from the comfort of your home. That's going to be starting next Sunday, April 25th at noon. They have all kinds of natives, vegetables, flowers, herbs, and much more to choose from. And some of the quantities are a little bit short or low, so shop early if you've got some specific needs. But what you need to do is go to www.thegreencenter.org. Again, starting Sunday, April 25th at noon, you can place your order, and Then you can come by and pick it up. They'll have it sitting on the outside of their building with your name and everything else. So it really works very, very well. And again, this is a not-for-profit. So thanks for shopping at a local not-for-profit organization. Again, the Green Center connects people with nature through science and the arts. So again, the website, www.thegreencenter.org. So want to order some plants from them? You're going to be able to pick them up Wednesday the 28th, Thursday the 29th, Friday the 30th, and Saturday, May 1st. They'll give you specific times that you can pick them up. And you go right. Their location is in University City on Blackberry, so not very far away, kind of in the center of the whole metropolitan area. But anyway, let's see. Why don't we take a call or two before we take a break? Let's go to Kent. Hi, Kent. How are you?
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
About 2 years ago, I planted two burning bushes in my front yard. The one is going gangbusters. The other one seems to be dying a slow death. And my question is there something I can get it that I can, fertilize it or something to get it back up, or should I cut my losses and get a different one?
I'd probably get a different one, to be honest with you. Because fertilizing, it's kind of like when you're feeling sick, eating food is not necessarily going to make you feel better. There's specific things. So this one, the location, you know, there's a problem with that particular site, whether it's proximity to a large tree root or whether it's, you know, maybe planted not quite at the proper depth, maybe planted a little bit low. But burning bush are pretty tough and durable, as you well know, because they're all over the metropolitan area. But usually it's a wet soil circumstance. That's what usually sends them kind of downhill.
Okay.
So in other words, if you get a new one, just make sure the top of the root ball, about 10% of the root ball or 15%, is above the surrounding ground.
Okay, I may have planted too deep then.
Yeah, if you got a dip, you know that's death for it for sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I'll give that a shot.
All right, great. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, my pleasure. And with everybody, when you plant anything, it doesn't really matter. Don't plant at grade. Always put the top of the root ball above the surrounding ground, regardless of what the plant is, unless it's something that can grow like in a really wet soil situation. Let's get another one in. Let's go to Nathan's. Hi, Nathan.
Yes. I got two questions. The first one I have is they're growing in my yard. I have young kids that love to go pick the dandelions and a dog that likes to eat them. What do you suggest I put down that's going to be safe to take care of that? Normally, I would never.
Yeah, I mean, basically, dandelions are a broadleaf weed, so you could use like a weed be gone type thing. Always read the level for the label to make sure that it's going to be safe. But there's, there's head to your favorite garden center. There's organic and, you know, weed controls, too, that you can take a look at as well.
Okay. All right. My second question is, as I heard you talking about cats, I got some cats and a groundhog living underneath my porch.
Whoa.
Yes. And we've been trying to get it out. The cats, they're feral. The groundhog, definitely a problem to worry about because it's right up around the foundation. We've tried doing some trapping, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Bear.
You're cutting out. So basically, you should probably bring in a professional service if you've tried to trap and you've not been able to.
Okay. I didn't know if there was any, sprays you could put down. You know, they got the deer spray and stuff like that.
Those things are kind of ineffective, especially if there's going to be a lot of rain. And if they've been there for a while, then they're really going to, they're going to resist any kind of thing that's going to try to drive them away. So I'd say a professional service, use them, have them come out with the traps.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Yep. Yeah, if you've got in the dandelion circumstance, there are several different kinds of organics. I mean, there's a horticultural vinegar. You could try that. Not just regular vinegar. Use the one that's formulated for, you know, weed control and see if that's going to work. But just try, you know, try a couple different things.
Yeah, I have never had this kind of issue before. It just kind of popped up this year. But I also have a dog that has epilepsy, has enough issues. A young pup, I don't want to take any other chances of introducing something else that may react
right.
with them.
You know, and another thing you can do is just ignore them and enjoy them. Dandelions,
yeah,
I mean.
It's in my backyard. I should just say the heck of it. It's
right.
My backyard. My front yard looks great.
Okay. I would say yes. Just enjoy the dandelions.
All right. That works.
All right. Thanks, Nathan.
Thanks, sir.
Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, back to the phones we go, and we're headed to Barb's yard. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike. I've heard that superphosphate food is good for iris. Is that true, and is it too late to be putting that down right now? I've already got some of the bloom starting to come up from the leaves.
No, basically, you're feeding the soil with this. You're not necessarily directly feeding the plant. So whenever you put it down, that's fine.
Okay.
Just make sure you follow the label, you know, watering it in and things along that line.
Okay, and is superphosphate food the best type for iris?
Well, I mean, it's fine. Superphosphate is fine, you know. What you're doing is you're, again, feeding the soil so that it will feed the tubers, the root system. I'm assuming, you know, all the iris, anything really, probably don't do it too often and don't do too much, because what could happen is if you haven't had a soil test done, you may already have a high level of phosphorus in that location. And having a super high level added on top of that could be detrimental to your plants as opposed to positive. That's what people don't quite understand. Phosphorus and potassium both, once the level gets too extreme, it could have a detrimental impact on whatever plant.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go to Lynn's yard. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Mike. I have a question about a redbud tree. We have one that is not quite 20 years old, and in the past, it has had beautiful pink flowers, and this year, there are virtually no flowers on the tree. Just wanting to know if it is still, if you think it's still viable or what.
It should be, but the redbuds are absolutely spectacular throughout the entire region. So I don't know if, you know, the exposure of this particular tree and its location, you know, the flower buds were frozen off during that 13 days when we got it, you know, ran through that spell where it didn't get above freezing or something along that line. But just watch out. Make sure that it leafs out and the leaves are fully colored, full size and everything else. If not, then it's headed downhill.
Yeah, I would say that you have to look very closely to see any flower on it right now.
Yeah.
I do know that last year there were some like bagworms hanging off the tree. So I will watch the leaves and like you said, make sure that they come out fully. Otherwise, maybe we will, go to plan B and plant something else there.
Right. But bagworms on a redbud tree, that's very rare.
Okay.
So.
Well, maybe they weren't bagworms, but something was on there last year.
Okay.
I sure appreciate your show. I look forward to it every Saturday morning, so thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. It's not my show.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. And now let's head out to St. Peter's. Hi, Bill. How are you today?
Well, good morning, Mike. How are you this morning?
Very good.
Quick question for you, something that I'm sure you've answered many times, but I'm going to do some tomatoes in containers on a patio. What should I use, potting soil or potting mix?
Potting mix.
Potting mix.
Right.
I know you've answered that lots of times, but I just couldn't remember.
But that's okay. I just, you know, I like it because, you know, with tomatoes, they need a lot of moisture, as you well know. You've probably grown them before. And so potting soil does have a tendency to hold the moisture. But I prefer, you know, put a saucer underneath, you know, the pot that you're going to be planting them in, and keep some, you know, keep some water in there and allow the, you know, the the water to pass down past the root system as opposed to keeping too much moisture, because then you can create some problems. Containerized, you know, I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but I still say potting mix is by far the best. I've been using it for basically 40 years for all the container stuff, where I've grown pretty much everything in containers possible.
Okay. Well, I will take care of that.
All right.
Thank you much. Yep. Appreciate it.
Certainly. My pleasure. And plenty of people say, you know, we like potting soil. If you've had good luck with something, stick with it. But I've had good luck with, like I said, potting mix. And pretty much I can't think of anything that I really haven't grown in potting mixes. Let's see. Now, where should we go? Let's go to Barb's yard. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
My name is Barb Devine. I have a birch tree, 25 years old, gorgeous tree all these years. Last year, it didn't look so hot. It dropped leaves early. This year, it's not coming out. And it's a huge tree. It's in my front yard. And should I worry about it? I guess I should.
Well, not necessarily. Are we talking river birch or what?
River birch.
Okay. Some of the birch trees haven't started leaf out, you know, so I wouldn't be overly concerned with it.
Really? Now, this late?
Yeah. I mean, there are several different types of trees that haven't leafed out yet.
Yeah, I see that. My neighbor across the street has a birch, but it's a different kind, and it's barely leafing out.
Right. So,
and
I mean,
should I just wait a while? Why? I mean, how long would you think? Maybe another month?
Yeah, if you're not getting leaves, you know, and it's for it to, you know, for something to impact it enough where it wouldn't leaf out at all, you know, and once with 1 year, then that's, you know, something's really weird.
Real. And, you know, from the root on the bottom where the root meets the soil,
right,
there's a big cluster of green leaves. That doesn't maybe doesn't mean anything, but
no.
It doesn't.
No, I wouldn't worry about that. And basically, I mean, the birch trees are really tough. They are historically known for dropping leaves through the entire growing season. So
yeah,
if you have not had that in the past, you've just been lucky.
Oh, I've had that.
Okay.
And when it gets very hot in the summer, a lot of leaves yellow and come off. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but it's a huge tree. It's got three huge trunks. And you know how big it can get. Well,
oh,
it's big. It's big. I hate to lose it. And I'm worried about it. I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
Except keep looking at it.
Don't stare at it. You're scaring it.
Yeah. So you think I should wait a while before I worry about it? It doesn't look like, I mean, it's got these little tiny things hanging off of it, little tiny, whatever, I don't know, the beginning of a leaf maybe? I don't know what it is.
Well, also they have flowers. I mean, they
look
like,
that.
Kind of like upside down candles in a way.
Right, exactly. I don't see anything like that yet.
Okay.
Nope. Nothing.
So I would say
I will watch it, Mike. I appreciate your help and I love your show.
Sure. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, and now let's go to South County and see what's going on with Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I've got a couple questions. First of all, when is the proper time to trim boxwood and holly bushes?
Basically before the new growth begins.
Oh, so I'm too late already.
Yeah. I mean, you can do it now. It's just that, you know, the areas that you're going to be cutting off, it may not be, you may expose some stems and things like that that you don't want to see, and it's not going to have a chance to cover those up. It may, but I would say you're better off to do it earlier before the new growth begins. So just kind of live with it as they are right now.
Okay. And then the other question I had, last year we've had a lot of troubles with moles, which they never left all winter. There was a couple weeks there where it got really cold that you didn't see anything. But last spring, they mostly made just like holes up in the yard, and you couldn't even push it down. And then they start making runners. I've had traps out. I've not caught any, and they've not, none of them, and they're all over the yard. So now my yard is bumpy, and I'm wondering if I can roll it. And also about the peanuts.
Well, you can try, you know, lots of different things. People will try mothballs and everything else. But the moles are in your yard because you have a nice yard and you have earthworms. That's their main diet. So consequently,
okay,
their tunneling is going towards the sounds of earthworms. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're stuck with. A nice yard, you got earthworms, and you got the moles. And, I mean, professional trappers can help. I mean, the traps they're difficult unless you have multiple traps put along the runs. I mean, I've had people call in and say, you know, they've had mold problems. They just sit out there in their yard with a shovel, and as soon as they see a tunnel move, they pop them up out of the ground and behead them or
my
whatever.
My husband did that once, too. We saw him. He run to get the shovels, and he got it.
Right.
Almost cut its head off, but he chopped down. But, yeah, would it hurt to roll the yard to try and even it out a little bit? It's gotten very bumpy.
Well, you can do that, but it's not going to make any difference to the moles.
No, I know that, so the yard is smoother.
Well, it's probably not going to make that much difference, but I would say go ahead and try it.
Oh, okay. And what about the peanuts? I heard last year somebody said something about the peanuts they work.
Peanuts. I mean, there's all kinds of different stuff, and some people have great luck with certain things and some with another thing, and it's just kind of a roll of the dice, to be honest.
Okay, because these moles keep jumping all over the yards. They're kind of covering it all, the front and the back both.
Right. Wherever they hear earthworms, that's where they're going.
Well, there's not much I can do about that.
Nope.
Okay, so you don't really recommend peanuts either, then?
Well, I mean, you could try them. They may work very well for you, but you just have to put them, you know, where they're going to be actively going by. So,
yeah,
I mean, if it's a tunnel that they've more or less abandoned because they've gotten all the earthworms in that area, then they're not going to do a darn thing.
Hmm. Okay. I know, was the traps 1 year? I've got 7 or 8 moles in
Whoa.
The same area. I think I got the mother and all her babies because it was like in March or April. I can't remember when. But I was getting them with the trap. But now, this year, I mean, I'm not getting anything. Or last year either. So,
well,
okay.
Keep the traps and try some other things and see what happens. Go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website, mobot.org, and see what they recommend.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Bye.
Thanks, Kathy. Mike Miller, KMY's Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
And right now, let's see what's going on with John. Hi, John.
How you doing, Mike?
Hey,
I got a question for you. Got a star magnolia bush, and I got some clippings off the branches. They're about 3/8 in diameter, and I got them soaking in water. Will they root, and can I plant them?
Basically, they won't root in water. You should get some rooting hormone at your favorite garden center. Get some potting mix for starting plant material and do it that way as opposed to trying to root them in water. Even if you did get some roots to come out, it would be forever to have enough roots so they're going to be able to be supported, you know, and grow. So with the rooting hormone, it's just a powder that you dip the tip into and then put it in the potting mix, like I said, for starting plant materials.
So just potting mix in that other stuff. What'd you call it?
Rooting hormone. H-O-R.
Rooting hormone. Okay, right. Just dip that in there and then put it in the potting mix. And then about how long will that take?
To make actually so that you could actually plant it in the ground? Probably a couple years.
Okay.
So it's
Great.
Not going to be a fast, you know, fast fix by any means.
Okay. Hey, I got to pull up some zoysia this spring. Should I wait till it's fully green, or can I start? It's starting to turn green now. Can I start cutting some of that up now, or what?
Oh yeah, if you're going to use a sod cutter or whatever to get rid of it, sure. Anytime, as long as you know where it is, that's fine.
Yeah, well, I gotta take it up because I got some sinkholes, and I'm going to add dirt and then reapply it.
Okay.
So that's okay to do right about now?
Yeah, because it is actively green.
Yeah, so. it's about 50-50 right now.
Right, yeah, so is mine.
Okay, yeah, good. So, man, I really love the program. Thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure. Yeah,
okay,
bye-bye. I mean, just... You know, these magnolia cuttings that you're going to do, you're going to, you know, grow them in pots for a couple years. So after you do the rooting hormone and the potting mix for starting plants, then you take that pot and you dig a hole in a garden space or something and put the pot down in that hole to sort of make sure that it can survive our screwball weather. Now let's go over to Larry's yard. Hi, Larry.
Hey, hi, Mike. I'm up in Springfield, Illinois. And I'm looking, Mike, to plant a new tree this spring. And I was looking at a spring snow crabapple. Can you give me an idea how that's different from a serviceberry?
Basically, more branches. Serviceberry, you know, it's a native type thing, so it's going to be a little bit more sparse as far as branching and everything goes. Flower-wise, probably the serviceberry is going to bloom a little bit earlier, and the crabapples are just basically blooming right now. And the crabapple is going to end up being a much, like I said, larger, not tall-wise, but just a much fuller tree.
All right, so if I have a small yard that I'm going to be planting this in, is a crabapple going to be larger?
Yes. I don't know how small is small, but I would stay with, you know, probably the serviceberry if I was you. I don't know how big your yard is or anything else. And you could always, you know, I mean, fool with the crabapple, but, I mean, to put something in with the idea that you're going to have to control the size of it and everything else is going to be problematic. Serviceberry is going to be a little bit more friendly to a smaller circumstance.
All right. One other question, a quickie. How much sun does azaleas really need?
They really, I mean, they don't need a whole lot of sun, but they can handle sun. So you can see them in the Japanese garden in basically more or less full sun at the botanical garden, or you can see them in, you know, the English woodland garden basically in full shade. So they're pretty tough and durable. It depends upon the variety more so than anything else.
All right. Yeah, because I don't have a lot of sun.
Right.
So any varieties you're recommending for up where I'm at?
Well, basically anything, you're kind of, you know, it's going to be tough regardless.
I'm on the border.
From
yeah,
here. The purples are the toughest colors, purples and reds.
All right. Okay, good. All right, Michael, thank you very much. Have a great day.
Sure. And now let's go, where should we go? We haven't talked to anybody named Linda all day long, except maybe six or seven different people. Let's go to another Linda's yard. Hi, Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Love your show. I have my house plants out for the last 2 weeks. Do I bring them in this week?
Well, I mean, it's kind of up to you. Are they close to the house and everything else? Then you should probably be okay with them that way. But I don't want them to be out there and then they get frozen and you call in next week and say, you told me to leave them out. Now they're all dead. So
are you going to bring yours in?
No.
No. That's pretty much all I need to hear. But are yours against the house then?
Yeah, they are. Because, I mean, I had to, like I always say, I want to have them in a shady location. So I actually have them on the north side of the house, some of them under Mugo pines and various things like that.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I know it is supposed to be cold, and I thought, will that affect them at all? But
right. You don't
okay,
know.
Okay, it's a lot of work to bring them in again.
Right. You're exactly right. That's why I actually have one that's still in the garage. I haven't moved outside. I'll probably leave that one in the garage and not move it outside until after this crazy Tuesday thing.
Right. All right. Well, thank you so much. Love your show.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
And now let's go and see what's going on with Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, I've got a question about crabgrass. Last fall, I started a lawn service right after the city moved the water meter into my yard and dug my yard up. And then I guess the sewer company or plumbing company heated it as well. But when everything started growing this spring, all kinds of crabgrass came up, and I pulled as much as I can, but it's laced throughout the yard, and the rest of my yard looks really nice with the lawn service I have. I'm trying to figure out how to get this under control.
Well, my guess is you don't have crabgrass, because crabgrass
is... That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, you probably have the annual bluegrass. Crabgrass has not, it's not really exploded yet. It's a warm season grass. It only starts pre-emergent. You put down when the forsythia is in bloom. So if it, you know, it is sprouted from seed, blah, 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 then it's, you know, it wouldn't be really big enough that you'd even notice what it was, to be honest.
Well, this is, like, huge. It grows 3-4 times faster than the rest of the yard. I mean, it was a foot tall above the rest of the yard when I started getting, you know, trying to get it under control.
Yeah,
and it really looks bad and mixed with the rest of the yard that looks like a nice green, you know, carpeted. I mean, it really looks nice, the rest of the yard.
Well, if you have a lawn service, I'd say let them take care of it. And I don't know, you know, what, you know, it's hard to say what, you know, type of grass it is or what type of weed, but have them control it as opposed to you trying to take it.
Yeah, I've placed a couple calls, and apparently they're so busy I'm having a hard time getting resolution at this time. I'm trying to be patient. I might have to be a little less of patient to get some answers maybe.
Right. Well, what you can do is just dig up a clump, take it to your favorite garden center, let them identify it, and then go from there.
Okay, that's a big help. That's a good idea. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck with that.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If something's growing that aggressively, that's, you know, pretty wild and crazy.
Yeah,
Mike
it's
Miller,
pretty aggressive.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Joe. Mike Miller, KMWorks Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, folks, we're headed to Baldwin. Hi, Al. How are you today?
Good morning, Mike. Fine, thank you. Hey, we're in our mid-70s, so we're very experienced in life, but don't know anything about gardening, evidently. And we were tricked into last Thursday putting out about 40 bedding plants. And now we understand Tuesday and Wednesday night it's going to get down into freezing area. And we were wondering, is it necessary? We're going to put some very lightweight plastic on those. Is that necessary for as cold as it's going to get, or what can you tell us?
Well, it's going to be a roll of dice. You know, it depends upon the exposure of your home and everything else. Sometimes the damage could be, yes, the temperature is really important, but if you've got the wind, that's going to bring the wind chill, because a lot of times you look online and it says it's 42 degrees, but it feels like 35. So, that plays a role in the whole thing. You could try, you know, to give them a little protection if you want, but beyond that, there's not too much else you can do. I've already planted some stuff out too myself.
Yeah. So if we were to cover those with a very light plastic, a clear plastic, and be on about 36 hours because of our schedule, they're in about 50% sun and shade. Would that be detrimental to have them under plastic that long?
It could be, because if the sun does come out, even though it's cold, then you can get really high levels of humidity in there and then consequently have some fungus problems starting. So when you do something like this, versus plastic, I would consider if you can get some access to some landscape fabric or burlap or something like that that is ventilated is going to be probably to the advantage more so than plastic.
Okay. And then I have another question about pussy willow cutting. So we've had some in water for about 2 weeks, and some of them are thriving because they're putting out green shoots, but there's no signs of roots coming out yet. Can we just leave them in the water, or should we put some rooting compound on them and put them in?
They may root in the water, but to have the amount of roots that's needed for the things to actually survive in growth is going to be forever and ever, and probably never, to be honest.
So it'd be best to put them in compound with soil. Then.
Right, exactly, with the rooting hormone.
Okay, and then one last question, good. So some of these flowering plants, and we've got violas and Armenia and saxifrage, is it necessary to deadhead those when the blooms are off?
For the most part, not. Their season is relatively short, so once you start deadheading, that's a lot of work, and it's not going to make that much difference.
I see. When you say they're short, we got some of them blooming now, they're not going to last all summer, basically?
No, they won't. They're cool season.
I see.
So when the weather gets hot, they go whoop, just like lots of other things.
Even though they're perennials, they'll come back next year, though.
Right, exactly. As far as the flowering goes.
The flowering stops, but the plants will be green.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. My pleasure. And let's go to Kathy in Baldwin. Kathy, how are you?
Hi, Mike. I have a problem with an apple tree. I planted two apple trees about 3 years ago, and they were doing just fine. Last year, unfortunately, I went out late in the season and found that the bugs or something had kind of decimated the leaves on my trees, and so I sprayed them. One has come back, and the other one is not leafing out. I've done the scratch test, and it's still green under there. Is there any hope for it?
There could be. I mean, it's just a matter of patience and everything else. But if it's a bug problem, to spray an insecticide without seeing the bugs, you're not doing it, you're not really helping anything.
Yeah, I don't know what it was it ate. It just went out there, and all the leaves were pretty much eaten off.
Right. So just, you know, monitor it really closely in the future. And I mean, you're going to see the insect, and I don't know what time of year it was or anything else, but when the insects are there and they're chewing, you're going to see them. So, I mean, again, if you don't see the insect, just to spray an insecticide is kind of a waste of time and money.
Yeah, I have no way of knowing. I just wondered if it was worth keeping it in, or should I just replace it? And that's three years, unfortunately, I have to go through again for my apple tree. But I was hoping there might be some chance for it to come back.
Well, I mean, don't get into a panic. If it doesn't leaf full, you know, leaf out fully by the mid-May or something like that, then it's probably a goner.
Okay. Okay, that gives me something to look forward to at least.
Yeah, another month.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. And sorry, Barb, Ted, David, and Linda, we're not going to be able to get to you today. But everybody, just with this colder weather, and you've already got stuff planted, so it just depends upon you know, how much you want to do to try to protect them. Sometimes it's necessary, sometimes it won't help. But who knows? Never hurts to try. Mike Miller, KMOR's Garden Hotline. I will see you next week.
As women, we all wake up one day and realize that youth, marriage, and perfect skin don't come with a refund policy. If that hits home, Party's Over is good for you. It's the show where beauty, heartbreak, and brutal honesty collide. Each week, beauty rebel and author of BS to Botox, Sandralina Silverman, and her guests spill the truth about aging, love, and everything in between. Expect laughter, wisdom, and the occasional Botox confession. Real women, real stories, real talk. Download Party's Over today on the Odyssey app.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. This episode is supported by Ring, because at the end of the day, your home is your sanctuary. And with Ring, it's protected. Whether you're across the house or across the country, keeping an eye on things shouldn't be a mystery. With the battery doorbell, you can keep track of your packages and see more of what's happening at your front door in real time. If you want to make sure your yard is safe at night, the Outdoor Cam Plus delivers a wide field of view and enhanced video clarity with Retinal 2K video. And for the ultimate in detail, you can upgrade to 4K cameras and doorbells featuring Retinal Vision. It gives you ultra-clear footage that actually lets you zoom in without losing those important details. The Ring system is helpful every single day. Like a lot of us, most of our shopping is done online. There's a certain peace of mind that comes with knowing exactly when a package arrives while you're busy at work or running errands. It's not just about the technology. It's about the relief of knowing your home is secure. It's incredibly easy to set up, and it gives you that extra layer of protection for what matters most. Your door, your yard, your home, your peace of mind. With Ring, it's protected. Shop cameras, doorbells, and more right now at ring.com.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in, because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Washing your dishes before you wash your dishes? Dirty Labs believes going green in the kitchen should not mean doing extra work. Their bioenzyme dishwasher detergent cuts through stuck on food and leaves dishes sparkling without compromising on safety or performance. No pre-rinse, no post-rinse, no compromise. Just powerful cleaning made without harsh chemicals. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Head to DirtyLabs.com and use code PODCAST to get 20% off your first order.